This is the 1UP Radio Network, and now GFW Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the GFW Ryan podcast. The rest of the GFW staff is out seeing a new Battlefield-related game today, and I don't play those damn shooters, so I figured I'd just fly solo and give you some of the Ryan. On today's agenda, I've got my latest EVE Online hijinks. Going to talk about this week's issue of DC's Comics 52. Going to tell you how to recreate the characters from the TV show Heroes in City of Heroes. We have a special furry corner, and then we'll go over last week's episode of Lost and some special Lost scoops. Actually, let's start off with Lost. No, okay, I'm done.
This is GFW Radio. This is the theme to the music of GFW Radio. Hi. I don't know if I like this better than Hello and Welcome. I don't know. This is our theme song now, though, I guess. The fans have spoken. You get me singing every week. Hi. We're here now. This is our podcast. We're here.
For all those people on the forums who want to see me talk more, see, you don't really want that.
Actually, I would listen to that show, Ryan.
I'd totally listen to that.
Are you kidding?
I thought that was a good lineup. It's probably better than our own lineup that we have here. The Ryan show was pretty hot.
I wanted to create the Heroes cast in here in City of Heroes.
Me too.
You would listen to a radio show about how to create the Heroes cast in City of Heroes?
Sure, I would.
That'd be as awesome as like the Sudoku podcast. 3, 2, blank.
So now 7. Go down.
Okay,
to
we're
going to
go on the second row now.
And go to the second option.
Yeah, save that when you are flying solo. It's good to know now, though, that we could all be gone. You could handle this solo task.
Let's just get on with the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the week of Dead Sciences. Okay, so we're here. It's April 3rd. 2007, and how is everybody?
Great. Super.
Pretty super.
It's Saturday morning, I'm drunk off the Activator. I never ever have a follower. Like I'm a two leader.
Red Dog checking
in. I didn't
know
if Sean was going to talk this week. That's what he chimed in.
Only as Ray Dog.
Only as Ray Dog. Should we introduce ourselves? Let's introduce ourselves.
Nah.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Who are you?
I'm Jeff Green.
I'm Ryan Scott.
I'm Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott, that's with two T's. Get it right or keep my name out your mouth, son.
Goddamn right.
How many misspellings you get on that one?
And Sean Malloy.
That's S-E-A-N.
Right.
Malloy.
And he's S-H-A-W-N.
Are people spelling your name wrong on the board?
My dad was hooked on phonics and Sean's was Irish or something.
That sounds about right.
We used to have a third Sean on the staff. There were three Seans at one point.
He now works for PC Gamer.
He does work for PC Gamer. Yeah. Yep.
It's good to see him back in the biz, but damn it.
Now the assistant art director over there, or associate art director. I don't know what they call their titles over there. But congrats to Mr. Dalskid.
Yeah.
He's a fine lad.
He's a very good
kid. It is good to see him back in the game biz. I don't know where he was. He had some other kind of civilian job. It was a gross mistake, and he's corrected it. Okay. So do we have stuff to talk about this week, or is that it? We'll see you next week. Thank you.
We're having a week for people. You to tell them.
Oh, I have to run this thing? God damn it. Okay. Well, we have all sorts of big news. We're going to talk a little bit about an announcement that was made in Vanguard, for those who care about that. We've got an interesting topic on game industry salaries. They got posted, I think, Monday, huh?
Well, it's the Game Developers Magazine, the annual report they do.
Uh-huh. So we have some interesting figures about that and why you should be in the game industry if you're not. Once you see these numbers, you will definitely want to be in it. I will talk like this the rest of the podcast.
Okay.
Some good news about Battlestar Galactica, Battlestar Galactica game. Free online, so you can, you know, play as, it's more like a sim, right? I don't get to play as number 6, say, right?
No, it's strictly space combat.
Yeah, okay. Damn it. we got some other hot topics this week. I think Sean's going to regale us with an arcade story at some point.
That's what I heard.
That's what I heard. That's rumor has it.
That's the word on the street, you know.
But first, is anybody playing anything? I will start off. I'm just going to talk. Hey, Jeff, what do you think? What are you playing? Glad you asked. I'll tell you what I'm playing. Rest of you guys shut up. I tried to play Stalker, and I couldn't.
Why not?
I have got a 2.5 gigahertz machine, 1 gig of RAM, 8800 video card, and that was not good enough for Stalker.
Oh. Did you mess with your with the dynamic lighting?
I messed with all that, and it still ran like butt.
That's post-patch?
Yes. Pre- and post-patch.
Oh, actually, I don't know if you heard about this, but so like the patch came out and actually negated game saves.
Yeah, but since I couldn't play it in the first place, I had nothing to save.
It would affect you very much.
Yeah, it was just very stuttery. I couldn't do it.
It affected me deeply after I spent 10 hours playing and my game save was destroyed.
Ugh. Really? So did you start over? And
I'm holding off for now.
Yeah. Are they fixing that? Have they patched the patch? Do we know yet?
Haven't heard anything yet. I actually been waiting. I've been trying to get a hold of my contact over at THQ to find out what the deal is there. But
Well, I don't have CNC yet. And I'm still trying to finish Infernal, but I was hoping to get some Stalker in, and it would not happen because I don't have a good enough machine anymore.
Something's not right. I think you need to mess with the settings a bit. So, because I just was talking to someone that got it running well on a 7800.
Really?
Yeah.
But maybe their processor's better than mine, or they have more RAM than me.
No.
I only have a gig of RAM.
Do you have the suck mode box checked?
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah, see, got to check that.
Uncheck the suck mode.
Yeah, I was going through all that, you know, restarted my machine 5 times, and I was definitely having one of those moments of, yeah, this is why PC gaming's so great.
Yeah.
when I reviewed the last Splinter Cell, I had to buy another stick of RAM for my home PC because I didn't have enough to run it.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, the machine you're playing on at home is pretty budget, right? Well,
yeah, with the lighting turned down at home, but on the on a Radeon 9800 card, it runs fine, really decent frame rates. And
well, we'll see. I don't know. Anybody else playing anything else now that I'm done with me?
So selfish.
See, I was apparently I really hate myself. I was playing Tortuga Two Treasures.
Tortuga Two Treasures. Yeah.
TTT.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, imagine pirates ripped off. And then they just kind of took – basically someone watched the Pirates of the Caribbean marathon or something, and then, like, they so literally just hijacked the plot and the characters. I mean,
Wait, do you mean the gameplay of Pirates, Sid Meier's Pirates?
They tried to lift some of the gameplay of Sid Meier's Pirates and the plot of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay.
So it's such a blatant ripoff.
But does it have that – it's the same gameplay as Pirates, kind of?
Kind of.
Like, exploration and
– It's not so much about the exploration. At least what I've played so far is all about, like, it just leads you down this one path. And you just – here's one mini game. Here's a cutscene. Here's another mini game.
Like, you could just play Sid Meier's Pirates instead.
That's exactly what I
because
thought.
Because that game, even the remake, was classic.
Well,
that game was gold.
I love that game.
It did not get as much – hype, I think, as it should have.
I mean, I remember going. Like,
I agree with you.
After about 2 hours of playing Tortuga, I went back to playing Pirates because I missed it. It made me realize how much I missed a good pirate game.
Mm-hmm.
I still got that one on my laptop.
Do you?
Yep.
I'm gonna dig that one up because that was a great game.
The only thing I couldn't quite get behind was the courtly dancing part, but other than that,
I liked the courtly dancing.
Fine.
In Pirates,
I was amused. I didn't like the sneaking through town parts after.
That was goofy.
One.
Uh-huh.
See, actually, that's something that they do try in this in Tortuga. The one thing they try to do that's kind of interesting, but they make it like so like lopsided. When you do that sneaking around town thing, it's actually like a click fest. You're like having combat against the port guards and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But God forbid one actually sees you, they just gang up on you. So like you're fighting off 9 guys at once, and you're dead outside of a minute.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Not really.
Did you find one of the two treasures or none of them? Or
I said, you know what? You keep the treasure. Go on. I'll be fine.
See. Anything, Sean, there?
Sean Elliott?
I'll sound like a broken record and then I'm playing Ill 2. No, but at first I will. And I'm playing Ill 2 Sturmovik 1946, which came out recently. And I have to say the whole name because I've noticed quite a few people asking, what's that flight sim he's talking about? But I won't sound like a broken record, and then I'm passing through phases of appreciation for the game. And I think I've gone through the whole, like, I did the whole, okay, let's make fun of the rivet counting
stuff and make fun of just like how many knobs and dials there are, and then moved into the phase of, okay, well, for example, this weekend I went to Best Buy looking for rudder pedals.
Oh, wow.
So basically now you're in the acceptance phase.
I'm in the acceptance phase. And just like, and in addition, I wanted to find, I'm still trying to track down a track IR, which is basically the latest version is you put a hat on and it just, there's, you know, the sensor you put on top of your monitor, and it will gauge where, you know, where your head's looking. But the thing that's so rad
about
it.
You're going to be a hero of the web pretty soon.
And you know what? Fuck it, because it's a good feeling. No, the whole thing with the head tracking stuff, and this is, I think if you can appreciate this if you don't even play this type of game, is that since you're moving your own, the equivalent of your own head independently of the cockpit, and that's not something, I mean, people that play Battlefield get it to an extent where you hold down control and you're able to mouse, look to the left of your, you know, out your window of your helicopter or whatever, see where your door gunner and the Black Hawk's aiming at. But, I mean, when you're in like a in a big, you know, in a tight turn or something, and you look up through the top of the plane, which is the equivalent of looking sideways, and you're very, in one of your, you know, one of your physical senses is aware of the momentum that your plane's traveling with, you know, where that's going. But you're also, you know, you do feel like, I mean, it's hard to pinpoint it, but the level of immersion is definitely something I haven't had in a long time. You know that feeling like when you go and you play a really good, not a ride simulator, but like a really good arcade game that has some sort of gimmick implemented into it, but you're like, this is actually cool. I mean, it's kind of nerdy, and I paid 75 cents for this, but it's working in a way where as long as I quit being such like a, I don't know, a hard to play, a jaded old gamer, and just kind of come at this like in the way that maybe your, I don't know, your brother or whatever would. And it's just a cool feeling.
Well, you know, that also works with racing games too.
Yeah, it worked with all sorts of games. Right. And so
how far do you have to move your head to like make it?
A very small amount, and I've watched videos of it in use, like dogfighting videos of people winning using it. Of course, they're promotional. I'm sure they were put on YouTube by the company.
Right.
But you could tell, though, it's really smooth and fluid. And so if I wanted to look all the way straight up, I'd probably just move a little bit.
Okay. So you're not, like, looking way up and then your eyes are rolling.
Yeah, then you can't even keep your eyes on the screen. but whether or not you use that, what I do with my controller is I map that. I have, like, the equivalent of a mouse nub from a laptop, you know, on my throttle. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to do it with that. And that works fine. But
don't you think if I was sitting across from you here wearing a head, and I told you that I was
anyone
at
that's
home
gonna come in
playing World of Warcraft and I had a headset on so that like when I cast my spells,
it's just pure laughing.
You'd be totally making fun of me.
But here's the thing, like the guy there's a certain amount about like, okay, special pleading, whatever, but these things I'm about to tell you are true. Okay. The guy who made this, Oleg Maddox, I was on the 1UP show last night, everyone's tell us about old Philip the Peanut Farmer, whoever who made this game, you know. But I'm like, dude, this guy he was part of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan back in the day. That's not pussy stuff.
I hope he's not bragging about it.
He's not. He's definitely
that wasn't
not
too cool when they did that.
No, he's definitely not bragging about it. And he
invading
even,
another country. Like
he wouldn't
that
even talk about it. The reason I know that is right because that someone on his team, who I won't name, posts on a forum. And they talk about just generally the philosophy of the game, whether or not, you know, they should actually depict violence, I mean, depict gore. And if you know in the latest versions, when you are hit in your cockpit, there's no blood, your screen starts to go red. But that was a big thing, is that Oleg wants no visual, like, depictions of gore or anything in this thing. And he doesn't even want to talk about that stuff. That's why you probably, no one knows this. I mean, and I hope they're not upset with me for saying this, because I did find this in a forum. But no, so he definitely doesn't go around. I mean, in the same way, you know, that like that you'd imagine. You don't go bragging about those, you know, that experience. But it shaped him, I'm sure of that. You know, clearly. Well, for the fact that in the negative sense that you don't have that kind of stuff in the game. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's one of those notches on your belt that says, at least of all things, you're not the peanut farmer or whatever. Back to the game. Some of the cool stuff that we've been doing now is, like, I played this with Matt Peckham, who's reviewing it for us this issue. Mm-hmm. My friend Rory, we're playing online. And EGM's Crispin Boyer is going to be joining us, too, in our little clique of nerds.
Wow, is he going to be riding, like, in a Mario plane or something so he feels comfortable there?
No. But
why am I dissing
the Mario plane?
Why would he be in the Mario plane? Yeah.
Console boy.
That's all they play over there at EGM is Mario.
Maybe he can ride around in a giant mushroom.
But it's like some of the cool, like a cool mission that we've been doing, which just ties into something else I want to say about the game. And this is, I'll say that first. This is that when you hear about this kind of game, you're like, okay, there's no way this is accessible. This is for a certain type of person. You're already like, there's a category, whatever you're calling me, a person that plays this kind of game. But I think the press has done a poor job in that we do talk, like when I first came on and talked about it, we do talk about the sense of this insider's club of you have to be able to do this and this in order to be part of this club. Mm-hmm. But they're easy modes. You can turn all this stuff off. If you want to make it so that there are no clouds, your bullets don't drop, you can't stall, there's no wind, you don't even have to take off. These are all independent switches. You can click every single one of them. You can make it so you don't feel G-force. You can't pass out. You can't bleed. Every single thing. And when you do that, the game becomes increasingly more arcadey. But you can. It also means that you can go in and, as you acclimate yourself to what's happening, create a lesson for yourself one at a time by adding more and more, by clicking more and more of these things and saying, okay, now let's introduce this into the sim environment. Sure. Until ultimately you end up at the point where that you hear about. But the thing about this that makes it different from other, you know, flight sims and combat flight sims is that, like, Oleg thinks that flying itself is really easy. It's not a difficult thing. And that, and he actually argues that other sim creators go wrong in that just trying to say, I mean, wearing that complexity or that, like, intricacy is like, you know, a badge of belonging or something. Mm-hmm. And he says that, I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, yes, planes have all these gauges and dials and stuff, but the pilot's only looking at one of them in a given time. I mean, just in the same
probably
way,
the fuel is what they're
right.
looking
at. If you go into a Lexus, you see a million lit up gauges and stuff. Yeah. But you've driven a car, you know, you just like, hey, you know, maybe you need to look down there once in a while. But it's the combat itself that gets intricate, you know. But it's also really rewarding. So here's the thing that I was taking it back to: the actual experience that we did have is like we're basically just playing these missions where it's just us in these experimental German jets, and they have high-caliber cannons attached, but also these wire-guided rockets. Now I'm going to try to make it sound hot. And we're fighting. We're taking out, like, you know, a big squadron of B-29s. But it's just cool. I mean, you shoot your missile, and then you use your separate controller to, like, kind of steer the missile into them. And, I mean, unlike, you know, another game, like, you're hitting these, and parts are falling off. You could specifically see engines come off or a wing comes off, and the whole thing just tips over. Or you'll see, I mean, they'll start feathering the props and try to get the other – turn the rest of the engines on that side off and get the other ones, you know, up and – it's just cool. It's fun. I still like it, and I found a new love.
No, it's interesting to listen to you go through this. I mean, it's probably not that usual these days, I would think, to watch someone, you know, actually get into this particular genre now and experience the, you know, newbie through wanting to add features until you're an actual experienced guy. I mean, you're getting into this right at the point where there's practically no games in the genre anymore.
Yeah,
I mean,
there are still quite a few, but it's just not. Yeah, like you're saying. I mean, and you've been working in the industry for long enough to know that, you know, it used to be your cover story every month. Like,
yeah, we talked about that last week. In the old days, it was. I mean, to me, the barrier to entry is still the joystick.
Right, and it is hard because they don't have those. Well, they did. I was happy to see that they had the SciTech X52 at Best Buy, and the non-pro model is like around $100 or something. That still is prohibitive, you know, but for it to be an impulse buy, they really do need to have like some cheap sticks that are available so you just wander in someplace and you're like, okay, cool.
They used to be everywhere. I mean, it was really not unusual back in the day for us all to have them on our desks. Mm-hmm. You know, even if we weren't hardcore, quote unquote, flight sim guys.
Right. You'd have them
because it was just part of your PC gaming setup.
I got the stick I have as a legacy from that. Because I remember when I was at EGM, I would always see them floating around. Whenever someone would get laid off or move or something, there's a pile of crap that they didn't want to take with them. It would always have like a brand new expensive flight stick in it.
Yep.
And this is kind of like the legacy where I finally got around to it. But I do think, one, it's kind of like you get older, you go from a gamer and you go from playing, I don't know. I mean, just you go from playing, I mean, Call of Duty, I love, I don't know. It's hard to think of a thing, but you just branch out and you want different sorts of games. You know, you start playing stuff like Europa Universalis and Ill 2. And I mean, and that seems kind of natural to me.
It seems cool.
But I do want to proselytize for it just because I think a lot more people than would enjoy it than probably realize they would, you know.
Mm-hmm. I am kind of curious because you've been a, you know, aviation buff for a long time. I know you got, you know, on the, especially World War II planes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you try other stuff in the past, like, you know, secret weapons at a Luftwaffe or?
I didn't. I mean, all the console stuff. So I would play anytime there would be like some
Crimson Skies, that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
Crimson Skies, and then, you know, the really poor games and all the, you know, Namco stuff, which I really don't like. I mean, it's like right now Ace Combat 6 screens are going around and they look great, but it's the same thing. It's the same story as every time. I mean, it's just night and day. I mean, you can't have any kind of good flight game that doesn't give you independent, like, look.
movement within your cockpit. Granted, it's different with jets because you have other means of tracking, you know, targets in the air. But I mean, that's a huge part of it. I mean, just being able to keep your eye on who you're chasing and everything. And instead of it feels the console ones feel so. And Crimson Skies is a whole other story. Mm-hmm. And what it did right in its own way, it captured the verticality of air combat, which was cool because you could put in a quick move, push one analog stick down, the other up, and then suddenly you're going straight up. Mm-hmm. Reverse it, and you're going straight down.
Well, that did start as a PC game.
Yeah.
Right. FASA, I mean.
But the other ones, though, you feel as if you're just going in a circle on a flat plane to me, like on a disc or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just is so, I mean, it just misses the whole feeling of going upside down and looking up and seeing basically just like the ground beneath you, you know, and clouds passing by and maybe another jet zips down beneath you, and then you just kind of flip down out of that inverted.
Now, that's the point at which I quit every single flight sim I ever try.
Yeah.
Once I see the sky below me, mm-hmm. I'm just like, ah! And then I crash, and then I load something easy. It's not like a Doom or something.
Yeah. A choplifter.
So I guess we're going to have to make a thread for it on our forums. I got people PMing me like, hey, I hear about this, and can I get in your click? But we'll ultimately get together some big posses, and we'll go hunt the B-29s like a big.
How big can those squadrons get? Like 100 players or something?
No, it's not quite as big as that. 32, I think, is the max in the server. But that's quite a few planes.
Well, and if you want to hunt Murlocs, just see me and Sean Malloy.
That's right.
Yep. But you got a podcast devoted to that.
Yeah, there's a whole podcast about that.
Maybe if you get enough support, there could be a Flight Sim podcast.
Oh, God.
Aces High, the podcast.
Actually, there probably is a more than one Flight Sim podcast out there.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they will be suing us.
I would bet.
Yeah. Mine would be like the retarded version of it. So next
this is the retarded version.
Next week we'll
PC
all be
gaming.
Talking about CNC. I hope
if our copies come in.
We should be getting copies, right?
I'm psyched for CNC 3.
It's supposed to be good. Oh, and also, what's it called? Just came out. I'm gonna go home and play it tonight. Found out about it last night. It was too late. But Desert Conflict, which is new mod from. It's not necessarily the same crew that made Desert Combat because they became Chaos Studios and are making Frontlines, but it was Darren, you said that they're handpicked.
Yeah, basically what happened was they kind of passed the baton on to like the next gen of devs, you know, up and coming devs that wanted to work on this.
Mm-hmm.
So they just kind of have the blessings of the Chaos Studios guys.
So Children this is now chaos. A major Battlefield 2 based mod that, among other things, I mean, it's not necessarily a total realism mod, but it adds all kinds of weird stuff from, not weird stuff, but it adds things from. You know, Scud missiles and other types of, you know, armored fighting vehicles to take. I think all missiles are back to just being dumbfire, which was a huge point because I mean the lock-on missiles took a lot out of the air combat in Battlefield 2, and a number of other things, new maps, a bunch of classic maps that from Desert Combat that they've updated.
Nice.
So
that was the mod I played the most.
I'm going to look forward to that
mod.
I'm surprised because if you had a hard time with Battlefield, that's you'd get just trashed in that game.
I believe it or not, I was actually good at Battlefield 1942.
Yeah.
It was just two. I just didn't play enough to get the hang of it.
Huh. So hopefully I'll report back on that.
So maybe now is actually a good transition for the Battlestar Galactica because that actually is a conversion of a sim, of a space sim. It's a total conversion of Free Space 2. Is that right?
That's exactly what it is.
A classic space sim from Interplay, one of their last final great games.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I didn't get into the flight sims nearly as much as some, but space sims was that for me. Like Privateer, Wing Commander.
Yeah, I played all those.
That was totally my thing.
X-wing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, all the X-wing TIE fighter stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so the Battlestar Galactica game. It's actually called Beyond the Red Line, and you can find it at www.game-warden.com/bsg. And it's basically a totally free game since Free Space 2 is now open source, so that's available for free as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
and that is a bargain.
And that seriously,
Free Space 2, I would go get that if I were you.
Totally. And so basically, it's a total conversion, and it's still in the demo phase, but you can download it right now and play some multiplayer and a demo of the campaign that's going to go forward.
So can you play as both human and Cylon, or what's the deal there? Do you know?
As far as I know, you can do human for now against Cylons, but there's probably more to it in multiplayer. Like obviously, like silent versus human in multiplayer.
You're still none of us have played this yet, right?
Well, what happened was like I was actually downloading it last night, and my computer crashed, so I have to reload it.
Awesome.
So no, right?
So that'd be a big fat no.
I was just wondering like how different it is than from Free Space. Is it just new skins? You know, I mean, is it like?
Well, the thing is, Free Space was like an arcade shooter, and apparently, you know, it wasn't like you know true physics and all that stuff. It's just obviously it's in space with zero gravity, but they are apparently adding some more stuff to it. I don't know much more than that right now, but it's, you know, hell, the price is right. It's my freeware
it
pick
indeed.
Of the week. So let me see. I'm just kind of reading off the about from the website.
Sure, go ahead.
They say, so multiplayer features, deathmatch, team deathmatch, King of the Hill, gauntlet missions, and possibly co-op. That's kind of cool. Right now, you can fly a Viper Mark II, Viper Mark VII, and the Raptor. So anyone who's watched the current show, not the 1970s one, that's the experience you're getting.
So I could be Starbuck.
You could be Star. You could be Cara.
You may already be Starbuck.
I might be.
Can't be Scar though.
I'd like to dress like her. What?
You can't be Scar.
What? No. Okay. So maybe we'll actually try to check that out and report back whether it's worth it or not. But definitely the Free Space 2 is though.
Yeah. Well.
Great game.
I'll know by tonight. I'm downloading it again.
And you're right. Can't go wrong for free.
You can.
Yeah,
I disagree with that.
No,
I disagree
really?
With that. Because as someone who heavily downloads mods,
No,
but I mean, it depends. It depends on how much hard drive you space, but you'll get a mod and you're like, okay, that definitely was not even worth bothering. It wasn't worth the effort of downloading it.
I suppose. I used to just, didn't you download like Doom maps by the dozens? I used to do that, the WADs.
Just
crazy.
To see. That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that would be bad if you were in like a slow loading map and you get a map and the first thing you get in addition to hearing like, you know, Krusty the Clown sound bites is it's just, it's nothing but you look on the ground and there's like a million weapons, every kind of weapon
and
a million units of ammunition for it. They do that in Half-Life 2 and they got the pulse rifle alt fire, which we call the shrimp cannon. And it's just like, it's instant death and ricochets around. As soon as you get in some, you're like, oh, maybe this will be good. And that's, I'm thinking about how when that Half-Life 2 deathmatch first came out, and there were only like two maps, so you'd be eager for anything new, hoping there'd just be some capable map maker who was quick. But no, every time you load it, this goddamn shrimp cannon in a giant box.
Well, they can't all be gold.
There's a lot of good maps now. They just took
time. Some time.
Sometimes you need the intentionally bad map though to really appreciate how good some map makers are.
That's right. You need a baseline.
Right.
I mean, I remember one time I intentionally designed a map where there was like this big pit in the middle, and you drop in it. Like all the weapons and like everything you want is there, but you can't get back out of the hole.
So you made that intentionally bad.
I made that intentionally
bad.
That
wasn't just okay.
I have a whole fixation with bad movies and just bad designs.
Camp Mac design. I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah.
You know what? That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
What's next? Mr. Mullen,
have
you been playing anything besides WoW?
Not really.
Not really?
No. You could hear all about my WoW talk on Legendary Thread, podcast at oneup.com.
Oh, that's a nice plug.
Very nice.
I played a little bit of Bookworm Adventures.
Bookworm Adventures?
I went back to that, yeah. I didn't play a whole lot when it came out, so I finally said, okay, I enjoyed Peggle. Let me try this Bookworm a little more.
Got to think a little more with Bookworm.
Yeah.
Not quite at the Peggle level of, you know, drool coming out of your mouth while you're playing.
Peggle is not that way, though. Like, that's something that, like, I have daily rotation still.
Still?
Like, dueling. Yeah, because the girlfriend
But the more you play Peggle, the more you get into the strategy of Peggle.
Yeah, the more you realize. I mean, okay, clearly, we're not talking, you know, it's not playing pool or something.
Right.
But you do see, you get to the point, like, I guarantee you play it for, like, a couple days, and instead of just saying, oh, this is probably good because I can imagine it's going to just generally be in this area and there are a lot of pegs over here.
Right.
Like, you at least visualize pretty clearly past the first ricochet and into the second one.
Right. You start.
And then once you do that, once your third eye sees it coming and it does come that way, it's pretty gratifying.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not like learning to fly or like getting spelling.
If only you had one of those headsets for Peggle. Yeah.
For all.
Or what's your big word?
A Peggle shooter.
Your big bookworm word.
I don't know. I found myself being annoyed by. I think I had like a really awesome word, and I started spelling it, and then nothing happened. Like it didn't register.
It didn't
Sometimes
register.
Sometimes the dictionary sucks on that thing.
Yeah, I was very annoyed. I was like, oh yeah, pernicious. This is gonna get this Charybdis.
Wow.
And then
you
like,
gotta send an angry letter.
I don't know if it was. I don't know if it was pernicious, but it was some big word that I was pretty sure was spelled right. Maybe it wasn't. I was just like, hey,
you should be able to update that dictionary too.
Yeah,
yeah,
but it's cool. I like it. It's fun. It's fun getting the golden fleece and using it somehow in a word game.
I still play that game.
either one.
It is. That's about it, though.
All right. Should we take a break and Peggle come back needs, with more Peggle news and events and stories and wackiness?
Do that. I got a story I could tell any time, too.
You got. Yeah, we'll come back with Sean's arcade story. We'll be right back. Fire.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. But as long as you're here, let me tell you about EGM Live, the weekly podcast from the editors of Electronic Gaming Monthly, along with the wonderful sounds of... EGM Live comes action-packed with special guests, late-breaking news, fanboy-baiting commentary, behind-the-scenes tales of office tomfoolery, and trivia contests with fantabulous prizes. Download it now at egmlive.oneup.com or subscribe to it through iTunes.
EGM Live is part of the 1UP Radio Network, taped in the Ziff Davis offices in San Francisco. It is not actually live, and contest prizes are not guaranteed to be fantabulous.
Hi, we're back. Or maybe Ryan can do his show again. Want to do that again, Ryan?
Ryan, what are we up to? Oh, wait, you're here.
Hello.
Bring us back in.
Bring us back in, Ryan.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, we're glad. You know, you get dissed for the not talking, but I think they're wrong. I think those people who say, like, they should kick Ryan off. He never says anything. They don't know what it's like to be sitting here, you know? Ryan's kind of like the Greek chorus. He sits here, he nods while we're talking, you know, sort of smiles.
Provides validation.
If we're saying something funny.
The internet, too. Yeah. Someone's going to hate on everything.
We're kind of like podcasting for Ryan here. He's sort of like our own.
Today I was reading people saying, he talks over everyone.
Who? You or me?
Yeah, you
me.
Just shut whatever. Up, Sean.
There's a certain balance to all things.
Mm-hmm.
I like our balance.
One guy,
I think we do a pretty good
one
job.
One emo-looking dude. And I say that in the most disparaging way.
so
compared me to, what would you say? Bob Saget and Robin Williams, but without the name.
Ouch.
No,
what?
Like, cool.
Robin Williams? What? That ain't cool at all, man.
I told him maybe we could... see through this misunderstanding if you came in to visit me at Neverland with Martin Bashir.
Damn. It's getting nasty.
Yeah. No, that's making fun of my
correlation.
No, it's like, I don't know. You got to think about it. There's some humor in there, I think. You know, Martin Bashir was the whole thing where Jacko was like, you know what? These people are saying I'm fucked up. I'm going to tell them I'm not, and I'm going to bring this Martin Bashir guy over to my fun land, and he's going to make a video that proves everyone that I really am a cool guy. So it's kind of like saying, like, come over here and prove that I'm, for the purpose of proving that I'm not as bad as you say, but ultimately finding out that I'm worse than you say.
And he winds up making a triumph of will.
I was just sophisticated-ish. Dude, couldn't get it.
You're operating at a higher level.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know about the videographer hired by Michael Jackson.
Martin Bashir, that was epic when that came out.
Was he the dude that who did the that was that big special, that like 2-hour?
Yeah, the 2-hour special, and they went to Neverland. He was like going around through, you know, through Vegas, like the Bellagio.
I'll take this one and this one. And
he was
one.
Like,
I had the Jolly Green Giant.
And he was very
hotel.
Defensive towards Michael, wasn't he? Just because you like touching
giant.
Little boys does not really mean you're a molester.
No, Martin. I do this with all the children.
Because you love them, don't you, Michael?
For the special children. Only for the special children.
So could I touch them too, Michael?
Only if the special children.
Well, that was the one.
Now, with this kind of dialogue, why would you need me to talk?
Exactly.
He teaches children to eat the green peas. Ho, 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 green giant.
Is he constructing a giant robot in Vegas, or did I dream that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. Or
about that, because that was one of the key events of the 21st century.
Oh, okay.
He's trying to build a giant Captain EO.
Okay, let's reel this back into something related to what our podcast
Moonwalker.
Is supposed to be about.
Moonwalker. Moonwalker is a video game.
Yeah.
We're retro.
At an arcade.
And the Sega Genesis.
We're talking about video games.
Okay, tell your arcade story now, Sean, while we're at this extreme low.
Now?
Yeah.
Right, okay,
we can't get any more
Ryan
off on a tangent.
Low. Ryan,
oh, Jesus.
Without spoiling the detail, because I did tell Ryan, I gave Ryan a teaser at lunch.
Yep.
How did it make you feel, Ryan?
Oh, this is going to be the new low.
Wow. Okay, I can't wait for this.
So this is sad. Yeah, maybe I should save it. Fuck it. I don't know. Every time I say I should save it, I go into it. So I'm just going to do it.
All right.
Here we go.
Let it roll.
All right, one time, me and my friend Corey, and I mentioned this guy before in the context of This is the guy I left. We had this insane rivalry of fighting games, Street Fighter, Tekken, Mortal Kombat, Virtua Fighter, later on Soul Calibur. And he got on a big run at Mortal Kombat and just was talking shit on me the whole time. And so in the past, that's the guy I left at Darkade. I was just like, all right, then. And I just like got in my car and left him there. Call your dad and have him come get you, dude. Your sister. So that was dick. That was like the most.
What, a couple years ago?
Dick maneuvers out there from pulled. But
last month.
So this same guy, we're on our way back to that same arcade. This is where so many, all the fun stuff happened. And he came to pick me up at my dorm. And we're driving. And the whole time, he's just tearing ass. You know, we're just driving. And it's the kind where at first, like, I have the window rolled down. And I have, like, my head hanging out. And then, you know, eventually how when someone's farting around you, you knew that farts were going to be involved in this, so don't act surprised. Someone's farting around you, and all of a sudden it's like it's not funny anymore. Like you want to just punch them.
Yeah.
You know, and then so it hit that point where I stopped laughing, you know, and I was just like, you know, seriously like swearing at him and stuff. And he was just choking, you know, I mean, just like the spasmodic glee. And then all of a sudden he stops laughing. And then like about, you know, I'm trying to get the timeline down on this because it's really important. About 10 seconds later, he goes, hey, I'm just going to drop you off at your parents because they lived like in between where my dorm was and then the arcade. I remembered I got to do this or that. I can't remember what he said he had to do. And immediately I knew.
Immediately. I know where this is going.
Corey, you shit your fucking pants. No, you're not dropping me off. You're going to my house. You're getting the grocery bag. You're putting your dookie drawers in them. You're throwing them in the trash. And then you're going commando to the arcade because you came all the way out here to get me. So, okay, we go to the arcade that he did all this. I mean, it was sure enough, just as I called, we go to the arcade. And then so the rad end of the story is that as soon as I called it, he was like, you can't tell Mike. You can't tell Mike. And Mike was another friend in our clique. And he was like, he was the town crier. Even more so than I was. So
as opposed to what's happening right now.
So well, this is years later.
I know,
this guy
I know.
Doesn't care now. Like this is
he doesn't care that he's now famous on the internet for shitting his pants on the way to the arcade.
So Mike is like Mike's now an accomplished fine artist, and it's funny because he sells his stuff at like you know Monterey and Carmel. You know, like
not anymore.
Sounds like that. Yeah. And immediately, so I told Mike, and he drew up like about a 6 to 8 panel comic book comic story. Telling the whole, you know, retelling everything I just told. And he watercolored it and everything. It looked really nice. And then, you know, weeks later, in the context of all of us hanging out, Mike just passes it around to a big group of us. And it's like, yeah, here, you know, here's something I was just working on lately. And then it gets to Corey. Corey looks immediately and understands what had happened. He just turns around at me and starts yelling. But it was, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
I didn't get any laughs out of that one.
No, we were all
I think I did.
That was like a subsonic laugh from me.
I just thinking, I don't think I want Corey visiting the GFW office anytime soon.
Just have a rack of Depends ready for him to show up.
Yeah, you're right. This was probably a new low for us. I didn't think it could go any lower.
That's just the
life I think it can.
I could tell one CGW fart story if I while we're on the topic. And that was at we used to all eat lunch in the lunchroom here at the glorious Ziff Davis offices. We would all go forage for our various food, and then we'd bring it back. We'd all sit in the conference room and talk. And quite often, there was a lot of burping going on because Dave Salvatore, who now works, where does he work now?
Intel,
you're right.
Hi, Dave.
He used to burp quite a lot. He was a champion belcher. I mean, this guy would like, you know, he could shake the walls with these belches. And so people would try to compete with him, but there was no competing with Dave. And so we're all sitting around burping, and at the time we had this intern who did not last for very long. We're all sitting there eating and burping, and this guy just, like, lets go a really loud fart and starts laughing, and we're all like, dude, we're eating lunch.
But you were
and
laughing.
He's like, not when he did that. He laughed, but we were all mad. And he's like, well, what? You guys are burping. We're like, it's not the same thing. In what universe are you from?
It depends, though. It could be burps can be far worse than farts. It depends.
I don't know. Not when you're eating lunch.
That's the real topic of this episode.
Which is worse?
Which can be worse?
Does this have to go in the iTunes write-up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
well,
it has to.
That's why we've got the cover on there. Say the
keyword,
whole thing
fart.
Is about Ryan talking
keyword.
About
keyword. You know, yeah. 52. Flatulence.
I think maybe you should just open us up to a poll.
Okay, I'm going to bring this back to something a little more serious.
Okay.
Because we've hit the skids here.
Yeah.
This is an article from Kotaku.com, and they were quoting Game Developer Magazine. The headline is Developers Roland in Benjamins, which I believe is slang for money.
They are moneyed individuals.
Is that what you young folk call it now? Benjamins? Okay. Industry Mag...
That's so... Actually...
What?
I was just realizing how... I mean, I guess when a video game site uses it, you know how played out it is. But think about how long it was that, like, the moment Puffy released, all about the Benjamins, baby. Like, that was played out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Actually, I was thinking that when I was in Los Angeles
That was
this
back
weekend.
When my friend was shooting his pants on the way to the arcade.
Really? They were saying Benjamins way back then?
Yeah.
I was in the suburbs of L.A., and two times this weekend I heard middle-aged men, and when I say middle-aged, I mean even older than me. So they were probably, you know, late 40s or 50s. I heard these, like, balding middle-aged white guys. One guy said, my bad. And another guy said, I feel you. And I was like, okay, neither of these phrases
Carl
should ever.
Rose doing it.
I would hear some guy, yes, I feel you. That was a bad putt.
MC Rose.
Oh, man, that kills me.
My bad.
And then he punches it in, dog.
Okay, so
that's dumb.
Benjamin.
So let's see. Game Developer Magazine came up with the average annual incomes for various jobs in the U.S. games industry. In 2006, here are some of the salaries that were made job by job in the gaming industry. Programmers were raking in an average of $80,886 a year. Artists, $65,107.
That's a lot of Todd McFarlane figures.
That is. Game designers, $61,538. Production personnel, $77,131. Production personnel would be what?
Producers, I guess.
I mean, they've already named artists and designers and programmers. I don't know what production personnel are.
I guess producers.
The producers,
producers
manager,
I guess.
Project management.
QA. Way down to 37,000.
Because who needs quality?
Right, which, there you go. That says a lot right there.
But no, it doesn't say how much they value it, but it says like how in demand the employees are. I mean, you don't need much of an education for Q&A. I mean, you do need an education, so don't get me wrong, but you don't need the same education that the programmer does.
Right, exactly. Right. No, exactly. You don't.
Yeah, so don't take that bad, QA. Totally love you. But I'm just saying you don't. I mean, clearly, if you had the same education as the programmer, you'd
be programming.
Probably be programming.
Right.
You know?
Or we'd have better games. Audio. Audio employees were averaging 69,000, 935,000. And ranked highest, business and legal, 95,596. So ooh. Programmers were second. In the rundown there, it was business and legal, 95. Programmers, 80.
It's interesting, the design is under
the lowest.
Programmer.
Well, yeah, I thought that first when I first heard that, but then also kind of said, well, they're the ones that require the least, like, official training on that list. Like, if you got, like, a designer... next to a programmer, obviously the programmer's gone through a lot more schooling specifically for programming than a designer would have gone through specifically for design. Maybe I'm wrong there. Maybe people are going through 10 years of design school, but I doubt it.
That's still pretty good money for pretty much all those titles except for QA, which really is kind of an entry-level job as well.
Right, right. It's like, game tester.
And those are all, I'm sure, were those averages or were those like...
Those were averages.
Those national averages, I think.
And as we were talking before we came on air here, the sad truth is that for a place like California, where we're podcasting from, those salaries actually aren't that high for the cost of living here.
Right.
Sadly.
Like when I read the numbers on that, I didn't say, well, they're not rolling it in the Benjamins, as the headline put it.
Kotaku's can't be based in San Francisco.
I don't know where Kotaku is.
Because you definitely wouldn't be considering 60,000 rolling in anything.
No,
if
that's
you're
like
here.
One
that's
bedroom apartment.
You'd be rolling in pennies.
I mean, to put it in perspective, I mean, wherever the listeners are, I mean, like, $300,000 here will get you, if you're lucky, like if you're in the real estate business, will get you like a condo, right? With one room.
You're looking at least
not
if you're
necessarily
lucky.
You're
not even a good one. Not even a good
in
one.
A prime neighborhood.
Not even a good one.
No, a single bedroom in like a not even a good area.
You're not going to get a house in the Bay Area, you know, in anywhere close to San Francisco or Berkeley for under.
One and a half.
Half a million at this point.
Mm-hmm. Like I was looking at, I've actually been looking at this kind of stuff, and like, yeah, you need at least a million for a decent house. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you need a geographical distribution of where these jobs are. I mean, we assume a lot of them are in these like more expensive metropolitan areas. But,
some we know aren't. North Carolina.
Right, I mean, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the percentage breakdown is.
So I guess the trick is to get a job in the game industry in one of these areas where the cost of living hasn't jumped yet.
I mean, but if I was making, you know, even the QA salary in Buffalo, New York, where I'm from, like, I'd be like, yeah, right. Buy a house.
The great thing is that a lot of these game mansion, companies, right? Especially the bigger ones, I mean, even for QA, they do a good job of taking care of their employees. You know, we go and visit these companies, and they have really nice setups for a lot of them. I mean, that's because they expect them to work long hours. But I've been to plenty of companies where, excuse me, where they'll have, like, in-house chefs who will make lunch for everybody all day. Mm-hmm. I mean, every day. That kind of thing, or gyms right on the premises. I mean, basically, so they never
one
leave.
Studio with with a developer.
I mean, if I were to guess, if you were to take any one of these jobs and kind of find the equivalent at a non-game place, like if it's okay, I'm a programmer for, you know, some Capcom studio, and I'm a programmer for Oracle. I bet the Oracle guy would be making a lot more because I think it's a supply and demand.
Well, hey, we can do that, frankly, with games. Quote-unquote journalism, can't we? You know, the average writer at a or editor at a magazine is likely to make more at a non-gaming place than they are at gaming. I can speak from experience.
Yes, absolutely.
especially if you consider gaming journalism a subset or offshoot of tech journalism. Mm-hmm.
And it is a supply and demand thing because working in the games industry is just way more sexy than working at, you know, a database company.
Yeah, I kind of think of us as sort of like one step below PE teacher. You know, they got the like those who can't do teach, those who can't teach PE. And I think those who can't teach PE, review games for a living. I think that's kind of where we're
at. Yeah, well, to put it in perspective, I think the drivers of BART, the local Bay Area Rapid Transit System, make a little over $60,000 a year.
Really?
They do. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow. And yet my train's late every day.
Yes. Just something to think about.
Yet my driver's still
and they don't even drive it, do they? They're pressing
No, they just press. There's one big button that says go.
Go.
I've seen it.
And they still can't get that right.
I don't know.
Which button was
it? It might be really hard. Maybe they have to like dodge cows all the time. I don't even notice it.
You need to play the BART driver sim and learn some respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn that throttle up. Throttle down.
What else do we have this week?
Well, we had the
Boy.
Big we had the
silence.
Big topic.
The big topic.
What was the big topic?
Big topic was the evolution of multiplayer gaming.
Oh, it wasn't even that. Right. Or it was kind not of for me. Like when I brought it up, it was more of like just the way that we play games socially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How that's changed over the years.
So, bring it on.
The social gaming experience. So you want me to start in one phase or do a quick through the years for me and then compare and contrast with your guys' experience?
Yeah. I feel you.
Okay. So what I was thinking was just interesting because
it is all about the Benjamins.
I mean, I've always been, you know, hootie-hoo. Wanted to play games with other people whenever possible.
Uh-huh.
And you started off, you know, it was an arcade experience where that silent rivalry with people you don't know jockeying for elbow space, you know, fighting games. Even before that, like Yar Kung Fu. Not Yar Kung Fu, single player, but like Karate Champ.
The thing that you had to do was you had to slap down the quarter.
Put the quarter up.
As soon as the guy was flailing, as if to say, yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
And then move in there. Or like, or they wait for you. There's that other thing too where like they're hoping that you come in, like they're losing, and they're like, put your quarter in. But then you just like wait, and then they like die, and then they got to put another quarter in if they want to play you, you know? Like that was an asshole maneuver.
Yeah. But so definitely some jungle law there.
Mm-hmm. But so, I mean, we had that sort of thing. But then also, I mean, when I was really young, of course, we're playing, you know, straight multiplayer games, you know, sports. It was mainly like on Nintendo, it was, you know, and Atari, you know, combat and sports and stuff like that. But I just always remember like also playing single player games, but taking turns with people. And I didn't have any siblings I lived with, but even with friends. And all the way up through like, you know, Super Metroid, Metal Gear Solid when that came out, Resident Evil when it first came out, and you take turns and you all kind of like watch one another and kind of hope that the other person dies so you can get your turn on there. But at the same time, you're like, or you just might be fatigued with this part and you don't want to do it, but you still want to like feel like you contributed to getting through it. Mm-hmm. So
did you never root for your friends?
Oh, I would. So then we'd help. But then you'd get mad too if like there'd always be that one friend and he'd want to like try the dumbest solutions to everything. And it was like the dude played Castlevania 2 for Nintendo, And that game actually is put together that way, but it like ruined him for life. So, you know, it's clear to everyone else in the room that all you need to do is you've got like whatever the star shaped key, and you need to put it in the star shaped, you know, locked door or whatever. But he wants to go back and look in the sewer and see if he needs to get some kind of acid to cover it with and pass it through a few, you know, subsequent phases. But so there's always that dude. Where am I going with this? And then like, I don't know. And then for me, then it just seemed like, the big Street Fighter came to home units and stuff. And then that, you know, brought the competitive stuff back. And then that was around the same time that Doom was in the dorm rooms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everyone's, you know, gathering around for that on LAN. And then that was really cool. But then it was perfect timing for me because like I always got the most enjoyment, at least with someone else there to play. And then that's when like online started taking off. So it was great. And I got to do all that. Mm-hmm. And,
Yeah.
Oh, is that ready to burp, dude? And then it's just like now it's like, it just seems like the greatest place for it to be going is that you have more and more co-op games and just like increased emphasis on co-op. And I mean, I'm really glad mm-hmm. when it's there, like in Gears of War, which is, you know, for being such a big, you know, prominent release and co-op having a huge part in that. Mm-hmm. EA's Army of Two, which is coming out. Yeah, but those are both console, but Mercenaries is coming for PC as well.
But doesn't it piss you off that, like, you see so many console games, even, like, online console games that have co-op, and yet, like, the co-op on PC games is few and far between in comparison.
But, of course, that's the whole appeal of MMOs, right?
Right.
I mean, you don't really play them, Sean, but that is the appeal. Because we're killing these monsters in a group mm-hmm. with other people,
but the most part. But the only thing I'm saying is, like, you know, MMOs are a distinct kind of like gameplay experience.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if I want to get into a shooter with somebody, or like mm-hmm. a single player campaign of whatever shooter yeah. comes up next, be able to do that with somebody.
Yeah, you're right. There, it would be great if there was more of that on the PC. And I don't get it either. Why?
I don't know if there's
don't get
one thing I haven't really gotten into on consoles yet is co-op online. I will still do co-op like same room with the other person, mm-hmm, which is right. why it was kind of disappointing when we were talking about Crackdown a couple of weeks ago and mm-hmm. someone said like, "Yeah, it's co-op, but mm-hmm. not split screen co-op."
That was so great for me is that it had the co-op.
Yeah, but I still want the like.
Doesn't split screen co-op drive you nuts though?
Not yeah. really. I mean, it doesn't. Like I mean, going back to GoldenEye, yeah. Well, back in the college days, mm-hmm. like, we just used to sit around the TV and play GoldenEye for days.
I know. I used to play GoldenEye, and I'd be so tempted to cheat all the time because, like, there'd be, like, these little windows. I'm like, okay, I'm, like, checking out the top right corner.
Oh, that was part of the game.
I know, but it's
just, tempted to cheat means you did cheat.
Yeah, I did cheat.
That was very much part of it, like, you know, knowing where the other people were. It made it a very different game. But, yeah, I co-op great, but split-screen co-op, don't go away.
Mm-hmm. I'm like the opposite.
Really?
Because it's like, in fact, I think, you know, when my friends do come over, what happens is we won't play video games together because we'd have more fun playing the games we want to play at home together, mm-hmm. you know, online.
I still get a lot of value out of the everyone's in the same room scenario.
It depends. The games change. We'll end up playing Soul Calibur, you know.
Right.
Or Virtua Fighter or something.
Right. Well, my favorite multiplayer experiences ever are the ones I had at CGW. With a group of people all in the same room playing a shooter,
mm-hmm.
the same LAN game. It was mostly Half-Life 1 and different maps, Team Fortress. I think we would have had a lot of fun if we were all at our separate homes playing these maps. But the fact that we were all in the same room yelling at each other and giving each other shit at least half of what made it.
I totally agree with that.
I say we bring that back. We need to like designate like blow the shit out of each other. Period.
But it's interesting. I mean, we can have that experience because we all work together in a magazine, right, about games.
Right. Everyone else has to go to a LAN party.
Right. And you know, those are more popular in other countries to have that kind of thing.
Right.
And it's interesting that it hasn't translated here as well because you would think that that would be so much fun.
I think they do. I mean, we still do have a few cyber cafes,
yeah.
you know, depending on where you go, places where people go.
It's a niche.
But it's the same reason why arcades aren't as big here as they are in some other parts of the world because, I mean, everyone's got a good computer at home or everyone's got a console or a mm-hmm. nice home theater TV they want to sit in front of.
We're all just at our own homes now.
Mm-hmm. I would totally like the social part of it, but it's just like, where, when and where, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to go play Counter-Strike 1.6 over at the Cyber Cafe.
You're right.
No, I don't
either. I don't either.
Right.
So even though we all like it, none of us would actually
want to go to a cyber cafe.
Yeah.
I want to play with people I know, like, in my house.
Yeah.
Because I think those, like you said, those are my greatest memories playing multiplayer games was, like, the college days when we lived with seven other people and would set up elaborate LAN systems just to play freaking Rise of the Triad or whatever.
Right.
Rise of the Triad. I remember that one. That was a fun LAN game.
I wish there were
the
more.
Wii is bringing it back, though.
Yep.
That's the whole basis of
you're
the
right.
Yeah.
The Wii is the well, four right. people in the same room.
I thought you were going to say Rise of the Triad's coming to
Wii. That would be, wow.
Yeah.
Rise of the Triad for the Wii?
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
I have no idea. I just thought, never mind. So.
I'm all for the co-op online, though. I hope more companies do it.
Yeah, like, I like it.
Crackdown, I wouldn't have touched it had it not been for that option in that game.
Really?
I mean, that's what attracted me. I was like, play this game. I mean, the very same reasons we'd play back then together is like a cutscene comes on and we're both making fun of it or like any, I mean, just the social experience of like commenting the whole time, the peanut gallery, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, dumb character lines and we're, you know, talking, making fun of those and repeating those or like in Crackdown, you go from the equivalent of Mexico land to Russia land to, you know, China land and just making fun of like how like stereotypical and just the whole thing is, and I mean, it's so much more fun that way. And I've been sitting there on my own in the living room, like, hey, you know, you can go use the computer, hon. I'm just going to be out here. And then in the living room, all you hear is like, hey, don't do that in my country, man. I mean, it's like whatever, you know, I mean, that's Crackdown. The moment you start it, it's like in your face stereotypes.
Yeah. All right.
Any of you? Well, any more?
Did you ever have the phase where, this is also back in college, where like Super Nintendo era, maybe, yeah, I was playing Final Fantasy III, which is Final Fantasy VI in Japan, whatever. I would be playing it, and everyone, like maybe like eight people would want me to play it. They would like say, hey, can you play Final Fantasy III? And I'd be like, oh, I don't want to play Final Fantasy III, but all right. And then there would be like a bunch of people watching this freaking game.
Just watching you play.
Yeah, and they would do that with Graphic Adventures. So I think like The Dig, we had a big audience that like I couldn't play unless certain people were there to watch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were they all stoned?
Half of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I missed. Did that ever happen? There was that like Super Metroid was that way. There's a bunch of people that like didn't want to play, but they all wanted to watch. You know?
That hasn't happened since then. Hmm. Very distinct year maybe where that was like the case.
I'm just trying to think.
Then we got a multitask and played a lot of Bomberman.
I remember when I was in college, like it was all about NHL. We used to have like huge, huge tournaments.
Yeah, we never liked those.
Never got into those?
Nah.
Dude, you lived like near Buffalo.
And Sega Genesis?
It's all about the snow and ice.
Yeah. That's why I'm not in Buffalo anymore.
The Sabres, man. Come on.
It was all Missile Command and pinball for me and my generation.
Down at the old arcade.
Yep.
Down at the old pizzeria.
Yep. Down at Silver Ball Arcade in Berkeley.
Ah.
I was a wee one getting my fingers pinched in that trackball playing that. Ever do that?
Oh, yeah.
Spin too hard.
Oh, like,
my skin gets caught.
It hurts.
On Missile Command, that shit hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, that leaves like a scar. I think I still have one.
And then there was a Tempest, the thing you had to spin in Tempest.
Yeah.
My hand used to get sore from that
I used to
that's why I got sore.
I used to play the shit out of that at the local pizzeria. And like... I used to play the shit out of Tempest at the local pizzeria. I'd have like that encrusted layer of like pizza grease and just sludge just around the dial. And I'm like,
Tempest is one of those games that's never converted well to any of the other, you know, every time one of these compilation packs come out for whatever console machine, they got Tempest on there. I'm not going to play Tempest with a gamepad. Sorry. I need the twiddly knob thingy.
Need a paddle.
Remember what was the one for the Atari Jaguar version?
Tempest 2000.
2K. Yep.
That was a great game, Tempest.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
We're turning into retronauts.
That was gaming in the
What else was great?
You better watch.
That was perfect. That was just like colored lines like spinning around.
This is all
scary.
All your fancy 3D graphics.
You should have done it. All week we've been getting emails internally for they want us to go and tape some video segments for, like, what is it, a show about GameTap?
Oh, yeah.
That? And I was making fun of it. I was like, I don't want to do that because... That's the equivalent of us being like, you know, in the Time Life music compilation commercial where they get like,
who could forget this band?
Oh, and then they
and
play
then
a little
Seals
quick,
and Crofts.
Reunited and it feels. Yeah. And then they show some couple walking down the beach. Oh, I remember when we played
Diamond
this.
Diamond Girl.
Like, yeah, so they basically wanted to turn us into those people for video games.
Aren't we doing that right now? Anyway?
Already, yeah, that's my point is.
Yeah,
like,
we are.
We're already doing it. We just don't have the video games. Bomberman,
Tempest, Final Fantasy III.
They're all here. I mean, you can get these games, but I mean, maybe this is for you, Jeff, in your newly found pitch man thing. But, like, I mean, this is the first time where you get all these games together in one place.
Uh-huh.
I mean, before, you used to track these down individually on eBay, mm-hmm. fill your living
you're
room
right.
up with old game hardware systems, but now you're playing them all
you're right.
all together.
You're right. We should advertise for this. Why go anywhere else? Game Tap.
Okay.
They got Sam and Max, too.
They do? Cool.
Yep.
Wow.
Actually, I hate to say it, but there is one thing I'm appreciating, because I could not get i76 to run in Windows lately.
Oh, a classic.
And it runs there. Mm-hmm. So, sorry. I hate to
plug. Interesting.
Hate to
classic game, that i76. Okay.
What else we got?
And now we're low.
Yeah, energy low here today.
Not about.
GFW podcast. 5 minutes?
Can't make
Give
it
or take.
5 minutes.
We can't do another
five
whole minutes.
We got a couple news items.
Hell.
You want to talk about
we
that
do.
Vanguard
we have a couple
thing?
News. Yeah, we can talk about the Vanguard thing very quickly. I kind of hate to bash Vanguard at this point in time.
Vanguard
sucks. A little bit like kicking the retarded kid. Sorry, not retarded.
What do you mean retarded?
Intellectually
differently abled.
Differently abled. Slow learner.
Slash woot. Thank you.
Only because we gave it kind of a harsh review, which is a little sad. I was rooting for this game. You know, we had Jeff Butler here in the studio quite a while ago, and we had a great conversation with him about the game. Mm-hmm. And alas, our review, not so good. I will say, however, MMOs, they can always, this is the first time. This game will evolve. We will keep looking at it. It could get better. That said, they just announced a big change that's not implemented yet, correct? It's just in a test.
They're going to test it,
now. Yeah.
The fact that they're even testing it is telling. Go ahead, Jeff.
Right. As posted on Vanguard's website, the current changes are: you will no longer leave a corpse behind when you die. Instead, you will drop an essence. You will no longer leave items, soulbound or not, on your essence. Essences will return a large amount of experience upon retrieval. So, and the amount of experience lost when you die has been decreased. And that is all couched in the explanation that these changes are part of our ongoing plan to improve your experience while playing Vanguard. So, the point is,
no more corpse runs.
No more corpse runs. And the symbolically big thing about that is, of course, is that corpse runs were one of the big, I wouldn't say selling points, that's taking it too far, but that was one of the kind of the big
philosophical things.
Right, it was kind of a statement. By having a corpse run in an MMO at this point in time, after the release of WoW, that was saying, we want our game to be more hardcore. Our game is not going to be as easy as WoW. If you're going to die, you're going to have to pay for it, and we think that gamers are going to like that because WoW is too easy. If you think WoW's too easy, if you're sick of WoW, have we got the game for you? Well, Vanguard's only been out now for a couple months, and they are now already backing off, or they appear as if they are going to back off with this announcement of one of those big points. So, of course, the message boards are all alight with this change and what it all means. And we're bringing up here for the same reason, because it does seem to point to that they are perhaps backing off that idea, that maybe they're saying, okay, well, what we said about it being people wanting a harder game, well, maybe they don't want it quite that hard. And so it seems kind of like a big retreat to me, especially this early in the game, to not stand by it.
Well, do you think that it was a big feature in the first place? I mean, it's like saying, "Hey, you pay us $20 a month, we'll kick you in the nuts." I'm not going to.
That's what a lot of people. I mean, that's been the response.
You're
the
right.
Whole time and they, from other people.
Exactly.
But been
now they're
to
saying,
it.
"Okay, well, I guess we're going
to
stop kicking you in the nuts." But which you're right. I mean, for a lot of us, including me, that's like a good thing. Oh, good, you're going to stop kicking me in the nuts. Maybe I'll play now, because actually, I don't really like being kicked in the nuts.
Right.
It happened to me once in seventh grade, and it hurt. So maybe now I'll try your game. But it does. But then that brings up the issue is like, okay, well, are they just being more WoW-like now?
Yes.
You know? And does that then mean that there is no alternative to being WoW-like? Can you have an MMO that's harder and succeed?
I think the financial reality is just kind of the bottom line there. Is like, okay, hardcore is wonderful for the hardcore people, but there ain't enough of them. And it looks like most people aren't hardcore enough to want to go to get their corpse every time. So
I just want to point out EVE Online.
EVE Online is pretty hardcore, right?
And how are they still growing? Like, you know,
they claim that they are. They're up over like 160,000.
All thanks to your causes on this podcast.
Well, they also have they're also an alternative to the fantasy MMOs because there's a gazillion of those things. So yep. You also get the bonus of that being spaceship MMO.
You know, right. But there's a couple, like, you know, alternative MMOs, and not many of them have been a success. Like Auto Assault is a great example of what was pretty good. There's some fundamental flaws with it. But,
Well, I think that's the most salient issue here is that, you know, if you're going to have a fantasy MMO that's dwarves and elves and whatever, you know, what are you going to do to differentiate yourself from WoW? Well, in Vanguard's case, they decided to make it harder. But now they're backing off the hardness part. So what is there to that?
Harder and high fantasy normal and more mapping. Like shellacked action figures.
And I'm being reductive. Certainly there's plenty of Vanguard fans probably will come on and say, it's not just that. There's a lot of good new features that WoW never had. And I get that. I do. So you don't have to send that email. But I do think that this is a significant change. And
I would like to see people come on our forum and defend this game to us.
They have a lot of good ideas.
Will.
They do. This game has a lot of good ideas. And it's early on.
That's the thing with it. It's always been like, great idea. Let's see it happen. Mm-hmm. And then still waiting.
I'm not giving up on it yet.
No.
Despite
MMOs can change. That's one of the, if anything, that's what they do really well.
Like Star Wars Galaxy, right? they completely rebooted that game. They said, okay, you're right. We didn't want to admit it at first.
What do you mean?
You're right. Our game sucks. We're going to take it all away, and we're going to re-release it. And now here it is, and it sucks worse.
And you know what?
So, okay, maybe that didn't work.
When they first showed that to us, we thought it was going to be good.
We did.
Well, what, Galaxies?
Well, the new Galaxies.
Oh. Well, the thing is, they rolled that out like hastily without like proper balancing.
Again.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's one of the great issues. At any MMO is, whoops, too fast.
Well, and of course, that was part of Vanguard's problem.
But are there any MMOs that kind of made that total turnaround that, like, had a crap release and then kind of rallied and came up with a good game, you know, a good game afterwards? I mean, I think Anarchy Online might qualify.
That was the one that came to my mind. It had a very crap release, and I felt like it got better over time, and I was into it.
Yeah, I gave up on it, like, because I started playing that one right at the beginning. I was like, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Never went back.
From what I've heard, again, EVE Online, when it first came out, was not very good in a lot of ways, but they've been improving it since. And certainly in the time I've played, it's improved.
I think, you know, releasing a game, and this is so not even anything beyond the most duh sort of point, so I really shouldn't have to make it, but releasing a game when it's not ready is such an incredibly short-sighted, dumb move. I mean, how do you ever get past that reputation? That your game is not done and that it, you know, that it's not working. I mean, how would you like to work on a game, you know, if that's you, for all those years, and then instead of waiting that extra bit of time to make sure it's right, to put it out and have anybody says after all the work you did, boy, they really should have waited till that thing was done. I mean, what a fucking waste.
Right.
Well, so. I guess what I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't have the insights here. I wonder who that fly on the wall was that kind of, because I know that like Vanguard's been around for a long time and it's changed a couple hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, at what point did, you know, when was the first time we saw this game? 3-4 years ago? Is that about right?
That's about right. Question. Yeah. 3 years ago?
Right. And I'm just like, in all that time, you wonder, like, you know, at what point, you know, like, when Sony finally said, screw it, you're shipping this game, what did Sigil say? Oh, no, we need another 2 years?
Well, I'm sure they probably did. I can't imagine. I wasn't there. This is complete speculation.
Right, exactly.
But I can't imagine anybody was going like, yeah, let's put it out there.
Well, Brad McQuaid even said, like, when it came out, he's like, we just ran out of funding and we financial reality is that we have to release this thing now.
Right.
I mean, he more or less said, like,
SOE is
it ain't ready.
We're
game.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he more or less did, and I'm sure they've been frantic to improve this thing since.
Right, since launch, but maybe this is part of it.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have reached this conclusion before releasing it.
had they beta tested for longer,
yep.
had they been given the opportunity to beta test longer.
You just don't know.
You don't know. We don't know. Well, should we end on that high note?
That we just don't
know. That we don't know shit? Yeah. Great.
How you doing over there, Sean?
It's Sean's time to sleep.
Sean's like rocking to his own music over there. He's kind of bopping his head.
He's listening to Red Dog in his...
I want to know what he's listening to.
Yeah, I feel you, though.
Yeah, dog.
Okay, I think we're done. Thanks for listening to the Ryan Show, followed by GFW Radio, whatever the hell we talked about this week. We'll be back next week with much, much more
stuff.
Wow. Okay, we're gone. Goodbye.
So energized.
This has been a presentation of the 1UP Radio Network. For more shows, visit podcast.1up.com.